Let's get back to the drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200. Now, it's time for Need to Know Basis.
Welcome back to the drive. Lieber Sage, AJ Jakubek, Matt Conazvita. We'll talk to Dave Smart here in a few minutes. AJ, what do we need to know on a Wednesday afternoon, which feels like a Thursday?
Well, the Ottawa Redblacks are getting set for the BC Lions tomorrow at TD Place. They had their walkthrough today. Depth chart is out. Running back William Powell, who we just heard from, will make his Redblacks return and season debut to start at running back. Justin Howell returns after a one-game absence. He'll start at safety. Randy Richards gets a call at right tackle, and Anthony Texada checks in the secondary in place of injured halfback Abdul Kenna. Also, special teams captain Brendan Gallanders returns to the lineup. We've got all your coverage tomorrow, 6 o'clock pregame, 7:30 start from TD Place right here on TSN 1200. Anthony Duclair, bad news for him. He's looking at potential surgery for an Achilles tendon injury that would require several months of recovery time. Jonathan David, only interested in a move to one of Europe's top clubs, with sources telling TSN that the 22-year-old Ottawa native looking at the likes of Arsenal, Barcelona, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, Real Madrid, Tottenham, amongst others. He played last two seasons, winning a league title with Lille, who are expected to sell him in the off season. And that is what you need to know today.
All right. We'll talk more Jonathan David and soccer later on in the program. However, let us get to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline right now, and we welcome in consultant for the Ottawa Senators, Director of Basketball Operations at Carleton, and I know how to get him off the phone with Matt Conazvita as I introduce him while that's happening, Dave Smart. Coach, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
I'm all right. Oh, it's Pofi again. Holy moly. It's crazy.
It's what?
Crazy. Both of you again. Like, this is like 3 weeks in a row.
Well, this is the usual, right?
Well, AJ's work week's like either Monday to Wednesday or Monday to Thursday, so it always now coincides with you being on, which is great.
Nice.
It's all good. I don't like missing these shows.
Can we say hi to your parents right now? Are they listening?
I'm sure they're listening. They always enjoy listening to this segment in particular.
Especially when you talk about the city of Edmonton the way you do.
I love Edmonton.
Yeah.
I'm there.
Are you going back for the brick tournament?
Leave on Friday for the brick tournament.
It's a lot of time in the mall.
It's 10 days. It's not going to go well. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not a big fan of the mall. Just like, it's not even my favorite mall in the city of Edmonton. If I was to do some shopping, I would go to a different mall.
I've never been to the mall, and I don't want to be to the mall, and I feel like the Fantasyland Hotel just does not fit my personality, so I don't see a lot of positives in this other than the hockey game.
I'm curious, what kind of room do you have? Do you have a special room? Like, there's a truck room, romantic rooms.
Yeah, oh, like, the romantic room.
Well, I don't know exactly, we have to look these up, but what do you have a special room?
No, I asked specifically for a simple room for my son and I.
That's disappointing.
He's going to be disappointed, but whatever. We're not doing the craziness.
When you said it doesn't fit into your personality, what is your personality that another hotel would fit into?
Simple, boring, grouchy. You know, that would be perfect.
You'd feel at home there, would you? Yeah.
Stay out of my way. I'll stay out of your way. Give me my room. Let me stay in my room. Let's just go place to place and no token smiles. No, you know, just move on. Let everybody stay in their lane. Everybody do their thing.
So here are the different rooms. You have modern Polynesian. You have the Roman room.
Hold on. Modern Polynesian. Yeah, that sounds good.
You have the space room. You have the Hollywood room. The modern igloo room.
Oh, yes.
Polynesian room. The Western room. The Imperial Room, the Truck Room, and a couple of others.
Cowboy hat on Dave Smart wouldn't look too bad either.
Yeah, you see, the thing about it is, this is the other thing that I've learned with my personality on going on trips with teams. If you are engaging, and if you get, like, the space room, I assume that it's either space or worse, it is a lot of space. If your room is big, like these people who get the suites, and then it's like, what are you doing? You're going to have 10-year-olds in your room the entire weekend. I left my 12-year-old with one of his buddies. I don't know where we were for 15 minutes. I said, just stay, watch some TV, relax. I got to go down to the lobby and get some. I came back and the entire team was in our room. And it's like, guys, what are we doing? What are we doing? Why? This is not the room. I'm not the friendly parent. I'm not that guy. You know that. You've known me for 3 years. I'm not that guy. And his buddy goes, Theo, I told you this was a bad idea.
Yeah, but Theo's doing it anyway, which is amazing out of Theo that he knows how upset you're going to be. I would do the same thing as a 12-year-old.
By the way, the space room.
I wasn't upset, but it was like, you know what? Go bug. I picked one of the parents that I wanted them to bug, and I said, he's in this room.
Now, do you even get invited to, like, the parents' suite or wherever they're getting together to have a couple of drinks and get away from the kids? Do you get invited to that room?
It's very much like our relationship here on the radio. It's very love-hate. There's some who really want me there. It's kind of like, I'm sure, the listeners. It's like some are turning this off right now, and some are going, you know what, for whatever reason, maybe I'm not the smartest person in the world, but this guy's reasonably entertaining. So it's love-hate. Some really want me there. Some really don't. Very seldom am I in the room with all of them.
By the way, the space room doesn't mean you get a lot of extra space.
It's space-themed. That's...
I just showed Lee.
Yeah,
he's impressed. I feel like Lee wants to go to the space room. Now.
No, I'm thinking of the Polynesian room. I need some downtime. Yes, give me modern Polynesian. AJ's showing me all the pictures now of the rooms. This is going really well. So let's change a little bit. And
AJ he's actually engaged. He's not watching Mad About You.
Exactly.
I feel like most of the questions he asked me, I've already answered in earlier questions, but he's been focused on the TV show still. Is it still running on your TV?
Seinfeld's on right now.
I do not watch Mad About You. I can assure you.
Seinfeld's on the TV that we can't turn off. Every other TV in the studio is turned off.
And honestly, if given the opportunity, if like the volume was actually on, I would probably choose to watch Seinfeld. No offense, but I just really like the show.
But you've seen
every
episode.
But I am engaged.
Hold on.
I'm fully engaged.
You've seen every episode, and you have no idea what's coming up with Dave and I and like all the things we can get into.
I still love every episode.
Okay.
I still, before we get to actual, you two need to, your whole crew, like let's not leave the whole crew out. Like everybody who works there. You need to self-evaluate that you still can't turn that TV off. Like that is, an 8-year-old should be able to.
No, but Dave, this is the thing. It's apathy. It's not a lack of, like, we actually.
Okay.
All right. So I'll try and transition and segue nicely here into, I don't know if there was apathy in the Seattle market before where they lost the Supersonics, but they're going to host a game in the fall, an NBA exhibition game that was officially announced today. And it feels like the NBA is on track to go back to Seattle. Do you think they should?
Yeah, I do. I think there's more interest. I mean, obviously Seattle, and I don't know a lot about the city. I know a decent amount. I know that the basketball has always been solid, but now it's getting very good. And because of that, there's more interest. I think just West Coast basketball in general, you know, with the success of, you know, UCLA's coming back with Mick and Gonzaga. I just think there's a bigger appetite for the sport now. And I think Seattle's a great city in general. And I think a pretty solid athletics, like sports city. So I don't think it's a bad idea. I wouldn't say it's a it's a automatic home run, but I think I kind of get why they're moving in that direction.
I'm a big Seattle booster. Vegas, the concern I have, because it feels like when you read stories that the league's going to expand by two, and almost every story you read, from whether it's Bill Simmons or some of the other people that are in the know, say the same two cities, Seattle and Vegas. Would you be concerned at all about Vegas? Okay, they got two teams now. They had zero before. You've got a successful hockey team in the Golden Knights. You've got a successful NFL team so far in the Raiders, and you've got 10 dates to sell there, two preseason and eight regular season, or eight or nine now that it's 17 games. But it feels like they're going to go from zero to five in a hurry, because the A's might be moving there in baseball. Major League Soccer might be moving there. And the NBA looks like they're going there. Is that a city that can support five teams? And if that's the case, would one of those sports maybe regret kind of going there, because there's only so much money to go around?
I would agree with you, AJ, that five is a lot, and it could be a problem. I mean, but I don't think the NBA is the one who has to worry. I think the NBA is safe. I think them going to Vegas, I think it'll be a success there. I worry that all these teams going there, some, like, you know, baseball with 181 home dates could be a bit of a problem, but I mean, it's not going to be a major problem, because it's something to do in the city, and there's so many visitors to the city. I think it'll be fine. I don't think it'll be great, Major League Baseball. Where I'd worry is, like, I'd be annoyed if I was the Golden Knights, because I'd be a little concerned that it gets saturated and it comes from somewhere, and it's not going to come from football. Like, they're not going to lose it in football. They may lose it in hockey, but they've had the advantage of being the first team there and gaining a fan base. So, but I would be a little worried if I was them, that with all these teams. But I don't think basketball, I don't think it's a concern at all. I think it'll be a hit.
Have you spent time there during summer league? Because it feels like it is the mecca, you know, when it comes in. And if you go back, and I get it, this is going back 35 years, but UNLV basketball in the 80s was the team there, and they were, you know, one of the best teams in NCAA basketball under Jerry Tarkanian. So basketball certainly has real strong roots there, with, you know, a lot of the conference tournaments out west being played there, and the summer league as well.
Almost all of them.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, it, and that's where everybody goes to train, and that's like, it's LA and Vegas, and summer league is the biggest thing ever. Like, I mean, let's be honest, everybody goes there for summer league. I've gone to summer league, and it's like, people go, want to go to summer league again? I go, no, it's like 180 degrees, and it's the worst basketball ever. I love Vegas. It's one of my favorite places, but the last place I'm going as a basketball guy is to summer league. But everybody is there. And I think if they had an NBA team, the interest would be off the charts. Like, it's an excuse to go there. Plus, it's a sport that there's so much interest in, and it's kind of that crowd. And it's been established over the last, I mean, obviously Vegas, yes, but the summer league has turned into it's just been built into such a huge thing. And now Vegas is basketball, and Vegas is NBA basketball. And it's so big that college basketball has moved almost, how many? I think there's four, maybe five conference tournaments in that 10-day span.
Yeah.
But they just moved it all to Vegas. And obviously they've been extremely successful, even through COVID, doing that. So I don't know why basketball wouldn't be anything but a success.
Just trying to picture you in one of those space rooms in Vegas, because you love to go there.
I do like Vegas. There's a lot of positives in Vegas.
Just have another on. Like, I mean, obviously this is great news for basketball and great news for those cities when it happens, and it feels like it's going to happen. But do you feel like can't basketball in this country? It feels like a couple of things can take it to the next level, and it's been the growth has been exceptional in the last 10 to 15 years in terms of the women's side, the amount of men's players we're developing, all that type of stuff. Do you feel like the next step is either the men's national team going on a run in the Olympics and getting to the semifinals, or another team here? And if that's the case, is it realistic to see a Montreal or a Vancouver getting another team here?
Do you think it is good for basketball that they're adding teams? Really?
AJ's a big proponent on...
Why do you think it's good? Again, I'm old,
yeah,
and I'm a coach, and I'm, as I said, grouchy. So it's like I get that I come from a different perspective. Honest to God, the NBA regular season is painful. Like, it's just painful. Could they... Like, adding two more teams, they're just going to make it more... I love the playoffs, and I love the sport. I love college basketball because it's now more than ever. Like, it's 25 years ago, Duke, Kentucky, they didn't have to play any games because they were going to get to the tournament anyway. Now, those teams actually miss the tournament if they mess up through the regular season. So college basketball, as much as the level of play is way down because so many guys are one and done, the excitement and the urgency is great. NBA, oh my God, until the playoffs, there is so little urgency. It's hard to watch. So two more teams, I feel like it would just get worse. Now on the Canadian thing, I guess, yes, adding a team would be great, but I like watching the games again, regular season would be terrible, but it would help the sport in our country. You know, I think we will make a run with our Olympic team at some point. There's just too much young talent to not. But, again, it depends. A lot of how far we go in the Olympics is how close – I've talked about this many times on this show – how close the rules between the NBA and FIBA become. The closer the rules become, the earlier we will make a run. As long as the rules are – basically playing two different sports, it's going to be difficult for us to make that run earlier rather than later. But I think it's all coming together. I think the rules between FIBA and the NBA are coming closer quickly, and I think that's a huge advantage to us. I mean, it's a huge advantage to the U.S. as well, but it's a bigger advantage to us because it's just a case of whether the U.S. win by 15 or whether they win by 30. For us, It could be the difference between being a quarterfinal team or a semifinal team, or even a final team.
Just to answer your question back about more teams in the regular season, like, I don't disagree with you. Now, my point from last week stands because I feel like you're going to be entertained by a lot less games than the average person, myself included, because I feel like you're just going to be mad as a basketball guy when you're not seeing certain things, whereas the average fan's probably going to be like, you know what, that's pretty good entertainment. But I do agree on the regular season that, like, I don't know if it's a problem about the amount of teams. I think the problem is I feel like they're going to try to address it, right? I mean, Silver has basically said this is a problem. It's a problem in terms of, you know, the load management, right? It's a problem in terms of the regular season games. They're going to try and do different things, like maybe an in-season tournament. Look at maybe erasing some regular season games and maybe cutting down from 82 to 70 or 72 and do some different things. I think that solves the problem more than the amount of teams does. I don't know.
I agree with that. I mean, but are they going to be able to do that? I mean, it still comes down to money. People want to get paid. They play more games. They get paid more. They're the load management. They don't get penalized for it. I mean, it's at some point, the problem is the NFL is moving more toward the NBA contract-wise, then the NBA is moving toward where the NFL was with non-guaranteed money. Like it would, like it's like the Kyrie thing where people are saying, like the Nets, it was thrown out, like they'll offer him a certain amount of money based on how many games he plays and his availability, and he would never take that, and people would never agree to that. But honestly, like shouldn't it be like that? Like with this load management stuff. I get it, but you're still getting paid for not playing. It seems ridiculous that you're getting paid for not playing, but that's just me. And And again, if they cut it to 72 and, you know, and back to only eight teams make the playoffs, and I wish home court would mean a little bit more in the playoffs, but if all that came into play, then it would be much better. But how are they going to get 10 games taken out? How are people going to agree? Would you agree to it, AJ? You're not that guy, but would you agree if you were a great basketball player to taking 10 games off?
Seems like a ludicrous question to AJ, but okay.
Less pay when you can already get paid for 82 games, yet take 15 games off for load management randomly. Hey, we just flew from Houston to San Antonio. Oh my God, I was on a plane for an hour it's a back to back. And I ate five like chef made meals on the plane, and I was taken by a limousine to the hotel from my private jet. But I got to take the next day off because it's a load management situation.
When you say you get it,
like honestly though, I know, and that's why, like I can't even put myself in their shoes, right? Like how do I put myself in LeBron James' shoes and say, well, like it's easy for anyone to sit on the sidelines and say, well, look, Michael Jordan played 82 games a year plus playoffs, and he didn't complain and made a pile of money, and there was no load management for him, right? It's easy from the outside to kind of say, yeah, why don't they do what Michael Jordan did? Why don't they do what the old school player did? But I appreciate how difficult it is on their body, the wear and tear. Probably played, you'd be able to answer this question better than me. They probably played a lot more basketball from, say, 12 to 17 in these days than, say, in the past because they're playing AAU all the time, right?
Right, and again, I'm not attacking the players at all. My point is, why would you say, hey, pay me for 10 games less a year and make me play the same amount of games because I'm not allowed to take any – like, if they're going to let me get paid for 82 games a year and take 17 games off for load management a year and extend my career 2-3 more years – Why wouldn't you do that? You'd be an idiot not to. Sorry, is idiot a bad thing to say on radio?
Nope, you're good.
All right. But like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to attack the players for doing it. I'm saying the way it's set up, how would the players' union ever support changing that? Like, it's crazy. They've got a great setup. And if Jordan played in this day and age and played every single game and lessened his career by 3 years because he did it. Well, I mean, I guess you could say that's awesome because he's super competitive but you also say it's not exactly the smartest thing either. He could have got 3 more years out of it at a ridiculous amount of pay. So I certainly don't criticize them for doing it, but I do think the league, it's hurting the product because why wouldn't a player do that? But by the players doing that, it hurts the product that we get to watch. So, on the other hand, how is the league ever going to change it and get the players' union to approve it? Like, they've allowed it to go down this road. I don't know how they change direction.
Just waiting for you guys to finish this conversation. I thought you were going to ask AJ.
I was going to say it would have to be a very lucrative tournament, right? In-season tournament. That would have to be the balancing act, right?
And that would be good. But, again, I hate when people sort of – and I didn't mean to come off like I was going after the player. I'd do the same thing as the player. So I'd extend my – if I could save 17 games a year.
Okay, so what we've learned here is that the owners have dug themselves into this hole in the first place and we're not getting out of it, right?
Well, they've got to figure out a way to get out of it. I don't have any answers. I feel like they've dug themselves into it and – how they get out of it is going to be very difficult.
All right. Who made out the best in the draft?
I don't know. I mean, it was a weird first three picks, right? I mean, I don't know if you watch the draft, follow the draft that closely, but I mean, would you say 80% of the experts were expecting someone else to be going number one?
Woj was wrong a lot, which never happens.
Like, I'm trying to figure out why he went third. And like, and again, I don't even have a problem with him going third because I've seen them all play, and I actually kind of felt like I don't love his game. I think he could be really special, but I feel like he doesn't play that hard.
You're talking Jabari Smith here?
Shocked. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that shocked that he went third because I might not have picked him one or two either. Now, I'm not like Holmgren's going to get his head handed to him early because the way he talks is ridiculous. But I like the way he talks. Like he's a confident guy, and I thought he would be too timid for the NBA, but like he believes he's going to be great. Which I didn't know that was kind of his personality. Now he's going to get his head handed to him early on, because of his mouth. But I don't think he's going to back down from it. So I kind of like that pick better than I would have before I heard him talk. Now, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about the Utah Jazz. So if you wanted to continue on that for a second,
what about him?
Okay, well the Utah Jazz, they hire Will Hardy. 34 yeah. years old. He's the youngest coach, but you have David Fizdale that kind of moves up into the management group. You have Danny Ainge there. You have the GM who is already in place. Is that a different structure than some of the other NBA teams? And do you like the structure of what the Utah Jazz did? Because it feels like it's a different way of attacking things.
Well, how do you feel like it's a different way of attacking things? Like in what aspect?
Well, because you're putting the head coach at 34 years old into place in a 5-year deal. But he right. doesn't have any experience as a head coach before that, but you're placing all the experience kind of above the guy that's with them on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis.
Well, I mean, I think obviously there's a relationship there with Ainge, and obviously he sees a special talent or saw a special talent and wanted to get him before someone else got him. And in order to do that at such a young age, he's put some things in place in terms of experience and in terms of dealing with different situations. I mean, the youth helps in terms of dealing with the players and the way the game's going right now. But you can't put a price tag on experience, even though things change in terms of how you deal with the players and how you deal with the league. You still need experience. It's still about dealing with people and dealing with the team room and dealing with the structure of a team. So I think it's a pretty smart move, but I think it's only a move you make if you feel like there's a special guy out there, which he obviously felt there was. And if you don't take advantage of it, someone else is going to get him before you do.
One last one on the draft. What did you make of the four Canadians going in the top 32 and two in the top 7.
I think it's great. I mean, I think two of them have huge upsides, and I mean it might not go great, but it could go unbelievably well because they've both got big time upsides. I mean, Sharp has a huge upside. Now it might go bad too. Like I don't know if he's proven much. Ben, I think, is a bit more of a solid pick, and I think he'll be good right from the start. I'm not sure his upside is ceiling quite as high. You guys know what I think of Andrew. I mean, he's going to be better than everybody thinks he's going to be, and I think the fact that he's with Carlisle is huge. I think it's an unbelievable place for him, and I think they'll use him well. And it's funny. Because I always talk about him as a comparable with what's his name from Virginia, who was second round pick.
Malcolm Brogdon.
With Brogdon, now they're different. I mean, one's kind of a combo guard 2 point, and the other one's a combo guard 0.2. But they're very similar in the way they play fundamentally, and their intelligence and their ability to win and ability to make the right play. And it's funny that he's in Indiana and like with Carlisle. It's a really good fit for him. So I think he'll do great. I think he'll have a really solid first year, and I think he'll just get better. So, you know, I think they'll all see their own level of success. I'm interested to see, you know, how the first year goes for the first round picks, because I think one's going to have a little harder time because he's still got a lot to learn, and the other, I think he's pretty close to NBA ready and plays both sides of the ball, so I think he'll do quite well right away.
So what'd you think of the Colorado Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup and, of course, Tampa losing, and Nick Paul gets so close but not able to win a Stanley Cup, but do you think that helps him in the future getting that close and with the experience that he got? So a couple of thoughts on how the Avalanche won and then about Nick Paul getting so close.
Well, I mean, I think the Avalanche were the best team. I think that it gets to a point where you watch hockey all year and you watch a million games. And I don't know if you guys felt this, but you watch that series and in a couple of games, it's just incredible how fast the game seemed to be being played, like on TV. I don't know if you felt that, but like there were spurts in games where you're going, this is unbelievable how fast these guys are playing. Like just the speed of the, like especially Colorado, but I mean even Tampa as well, but Colorado and I mean it's funny how tough some of these guys are. Where I was talking to Vanner today, and he was just talking about, you know, what some of these guys played through and how tough they are and how important winning a Stanley Cup is to them. It's just a lot of perspective in terms of what you're watching and how the sport is special that way. Like it really is. I mean, I'm a sports guy. Like I follow almost all sports, and I feel like from a team sport perspective, and I mean, I don't count soccer because I don't like soccer. So
I was waiting for it. I actually thought you were going to skip over it, but I knew you were going to, anyways,
I'm sure
11v11. You're talking about a team sport that probably might have more team than the others that you could maybe learn from even.
Is this my segment or your segment? Do we have to talk about?
Feels like both of your segments.
I don't like bring a soccer guy on to talk soccer. Don't bring me on. I follow like every sport.
Then don't bring up soccer in the first place and you won't have to talk about it. No, Dave. Don't bring
that they take seriously winning, but I'm saying with hockey, like what the players will go through to win a Stanley Cup is pretty. It's pretty impressive. And again, I don't know. I mean, you watch the games. Were you not sort of taken aback at the speed of some of the games, or certainly segments of some of those Stanley Cup final games?
Yes, and that leads to my next question, which is.
What about the Nick Paul question?
Well, just let him finish, AJ.
Yeah, I will.
Like, I know you guys are having a great conversation today. You guys are having an awesome conversation today, and it's great. But, Dave, if you just lessons we can all learn from. Dave,
all right, Nick Paul.
Don't bring up soccer, and then don't ask AJ follow-up questions, knowing you're going to get another three-minute response and then a question being asked back to you. This is how this works.
First of all, that would be going against my first rule of this, and that is listening to any advice from you. So I don't know. Mm. You're never going to need someone else to come on to give me advice, because I'm not breaking that first rule ever, because I feel like it's the safest rule to stand by. Do not listen to your advice. Mm. Even if it's good. It's 80% bad, 20% good. I'm just going to pass on the 20%, just to be safe. Anyway, what was the Nick Paul question?
Well, just about getting that close, having the opportunity to be with a different team, learn from a team with a championship pedigree, get that close, see some of the heartbreak, and understand what it's like to get that close and how that will further your career.
Can we talk about the fact that he should be buying me lunch every time we play golf because of the millions and millions and millions of dollars he's going to get paid because of what he did in the playoffs? Can we talk about that?
Well, like, you worked yourself into the question.
Anything for him because of the millions and millions of dollars he's earned himself in the last two and a half months? Would we agree that he's probably earned himself a lot of money?
He has.
Yeah.
And good for him because he's done it the right way. But I do think it's a, I mean, like just from a financial standpoint, it's a huge win for him. I mean, he earned it and he's going to get it. Someone's going to pay him because it'd be crazy not to. And I mean, what didn't he do? I mean, I talk about this with people who know way more about hockey than I do. Like I said, Vanner, we talk about it. Like, what didn't he do? What didn't that guy do? He's such an asset, and someone's going to pay him a lot of money to be an asset for their team. But I also think on top of just his ability to play, going through that with that team and being in the room every single day, I know just from talking to him that he learned a ton, and he's a guy who picks that stuff up because he respects those types of players, and he learns every day from them. So it's going to be a huge asset for any team to pick him up because he will convey that to his room. So again, even though he didn't win, I know he's disappointed about that. Guaranteed, he gained so much over the last 2.5 months. It's incredible.
Pipe dream, or do you think it's possible he could come back?
I hope he comes back. I mean, I don't know if it would happen. I mean, I would think that if again, I don't know the deal. I don't know whether we'd pay him the money that someone else would pay him. But I think if we would pay him the money that other people would pay him, I think he'd strongly consider coming back. I have no real inside info,
yep.
But I do know he likes the city. He likes the people, you know, but I mean, he loves Tampa too. But do I think it'll likely happen? I don't know. I mean, do I think it's a pipe dream? No, I don't think it's a pipe dream. I think there's a lot of reasons it could. And he's a smart guy. He knows if he came back and he walked into that room, I think he was highly respected when he left. Now it would be another level of respect because they'd want to learn from him. And he knows how much young talent there is in that room. And those guys love him, and he knows that. So I think we're going to have to pay him. I mean, there's just no way around that. He's got to look out for his future.
And with a guy that would probably make, or he will make more money than maybe he would have signed for before, and people would, you know, fans might be upset about that. But at the same time, the experience that he garnered, how much is that worth, right? Like, yes, he's going to get paid more now than he would have got paid before, but he's also gone through a whole bunch of stuff and learned and is a much better player on and off the ice because of this experience, no?
I agree with you. I think, you know, like people might complain that we could have got him earlier, but again, without that experience, then it's not the same player. He's a different player now. I mean, his confidence level's off the charts, but he's learned so much and he can convey that. And that's what our team probably needs. I mean, is some experience in winning and what it takes. And it couldn't come from someone that they like. They couldn't find someone they like more than they like him, and someone that they would listen to more than they would listen to him. So I think there's a lot of incredible positives to him coming back. But yes, I mean, obviously it would cost us probably over $1 million more a year than it would have back then. But maybe it's worth it. Maybe it all plays out for the better.
All right, I got a U Sports question for you. And it's a Carlton question, too. Mark Nelson, when you get a guy with 30 years coaching experience at the NCAA and CFL level that won a Grey Cup here as a defensive coordinator and loves the city of Ottawa, what does it mean, not just to the Ravens program, but to U Sports in general, to get a guy like that that's coming to be the special teams coordinator for Carlton this year?
I think it's obviously a positive. I mean, it's more about what he will teach other coaches and help in the room and then like the actual position he has. Like, again, you can't teach experience. You've got to learn experience. I mean, there's a lot of really smart people out there who are as smart as they can be for their age, but without experience, you can't be as smart as the person who's been through all that stuff. I say that I got 2 12-year-olds in my back seat right now, and I coach them, and I go, like, guys, you can only be smart for a 12-year-old. You're never going to be smart at 12. It's impossible, because you don't have enough experience to actually be smart at 12 years old. You're just a smart 12-year-old. You're, no matter how smart you are as a 12-year-old, you're not as smart as a 40-year-old who's been through, you know, four times, or 48-year-old who's been through four times the years of experience and can give that to you. It's the same thing.
So what you're saying is Lee is smarter than the kids in the back seat? Four times as smart?
I don't know if he's had the proper experience. It depends. I mean, if you got to have that many years of experience in whatever you're talking about. He tries to sort of act like he's smart in things that he has basically a 12-year-old's experience in. Mm. So sometimes he comes off as not so smart. But I'm sure there's things that he's smart in. We just haven't found them yet. But we will.
I'm smart enough to end this segment. Yeah, and the kids want to talk to you. And their last name, one of them's last name is Smart, right? So they're going to be the smartest kids there.
Yeah, name doesn't always mean anything.
You got that right. Coach, Dave Smart, always good talking to you.
You had no U-Sport question for me, Lee?
No, it's 3:45, and AJ asked you a U-Sports question.
AJ always asks me the U-Sports question.
No, that's not true.
You never ask. Okay. When's the last time? I'd like to go back in the tape and find out the last time you asked me a U-Sports question.
Yeah, it was probably last week. Like, sure. Enjoy Edmonton. When are you going? Friday?
Friday night. We leave Friday night.
So we get to talk to you next week from Edmonton?
I'm just checking the schedule. I'm sure the listeners are right now. I am available at 3 p.m. your time next Wednesday. So I'm sure the three listeners who like listening to me are thrilled about that.
Yeah.
We're going a little long. Some of those listeners who turned the radio off at 3:04 are turning it back on, and they're not happy.
I'm not going to lie to you. I get some of those texts where it's like, I turned them off and I literally turned it back on 40 minutes later and he's still talking.
That makes me happy.
Yeah.
All right.
Goodbye, Coach.
Thanks, Dave.
See you guys. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
Dave Smart on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Man, it's starting to get long with him, but it takes sometimes that long to get out some information. And I think we got some information out. I'm going to ask you about it after the break. I think there's a lot of people that think Nick Paul coming back is a pipe dream.
That's why I asked him.
And
he doesn't think it's a pipe dream. It's interesting.
It is. We'll talk about it when we come back on The Drive on TSN 1200.
Let's get back to The Drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lee Versage, AJ Jack Quebec, and Matt Conisvita. Just a couple of minutes in this segment, and then we'll get back on track here. Lots to talk about, including the Red Blacks, including some of the things going on at Wimbledon. Can tell you that Hockey Canada has lost Tim Hortons now for the World Juniors as far as their support. So things still kind of spiraling out of control for Hockey Canada here. And this will be another big one.
Well, they've got to make changes, right? That's the bottom line. A lot of this money is being tied to, okay, you know what? We're not just saying we're out. Like, just reading some of the wording on, I haven't read every piece so far, but mm-hmm. a lot of them have kind of said, until we see the necessary changes made, that we're pulling our money.
Yeah, suspending support is how Tim Hortons has deemed it.
So they need, this is something that should have been addressed. That's basically what they're saying. This should have been addressed.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been addressed. Address it, and we'll probably back in. But this should have been addressed.
Right.
And the only reason it is going to get addressed now is because of the great work of, you know, all the different reporters from Katie Strang, Ian Mendez, Rick Westhead. And now they've been called on it. And now they're going to have to, right? Which it should have been done on their own, but they're being forced into it because of this public pressure.
And unfortunately, a lot of the public pressure comes when sponsors do this. Big-time sponsors with the money. Scotiabank, Canadian Tire, TELUS, and now Tim Hortons have all done it.
Well, as soon as one decides, right?
Yeah.
Generally, it's a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm. I wish, to your point, I wish we had change before things like this have to happen to force change.
Yeah, there needs to be better checks and balances in place, period.
All right, so we'll talk about the Nick Paul stuff that Dave Smart brought up in the next hour. We'll get more into the CFL. I want to bring up to you, and I wanted to get to this with Dave. We just incredibly didn't have time after
Well, I know. I had a couple of questions that I was holding as well.
But Tanner Houck is the closer for the Boston Red Sox. He is unvaccinated. So he didn't come to Toronto. And they lost a ninth inning lead, and the Boston media tore him apart yesterday. It's the Boston media. They are very tough. Should they have destroyed Tanner Houck last night? It was not a good scenario for the Red Sox. You'd rather them probably lose 7-1 in that case, as opposed to having a ninth inning lead, not even getting an out, and losing in the bottom of the ninth inning because your closer was sitting at home. So that's an interesting discussion as well. A lot to get to here in the next couple of hours. Offside coming up at 6. We'll get what you need to know after a 580 CFRA news update and get into hour 3 of the drive on TSN 1200.